And welcome back. This is Daily Buddhism, audio show number 40. My name is Brian Schell, and I'm your host for the show. You can find the text as well as all links mentioned in this program and all past episodes on the website at www.dailybuddhism.com. And only two announcements this week. First, for those of you who get the Tao of the Day emails, and especially for those of you who don't, the Tao of the Day website is restarting with a brand new translation as of Monday. We finished another round of 81 chapters, and it's time to start over again with a brand new number one. Now is the best time to start looking at the Tao. You can sign up for the daily email at www.taoofthedaytaooftheday.com, or subscribe to the RSS feed there as well. However, I will leave all the MP3 files on the server, so there are now two full versions of the Tao available for free downloading. I don't see much need for a third. So as of right now, I will no longer be recording and releasing new chapters of the Tao in a podcast format. After more than 162 episodes, I'm not sure that it's something I want to continue to do indefinitely. Now, I'll still be sending out a chapter a day by email and on the blog, as always, but the recordings are done. Actually, now that I don't have to deal with the recordings, I may be able to put in a little more commentary and not have to let the Tao speak for itself so much. Here on the Daily Buddhism, however, things are not going to change. Business as usual. On this podcast, I read my own articles and a few guest posts each week. The Daily Buddhism audio show is the read aloud version of what goes into the basic Daily Buddhism daily email newsletter and the original articles that go on the dailybuddhism.com blog. But the story doesn't end there. Many of the topics I discuss here have reader comments and additional thoughts posted after the original material that you read here. Most of the articles this past week received many comments, many of which were probably more insightful than my original posts. So check out the comments that appear after the original articles on the blog. I've also started including the responses to some of the busier topics in the weekly Buddhism PDF magazine, as many of these responses are worth holding on to. And now, on with this week's show. We started out Monday with a question from a reader. Hi, I just wanted to say how much I enjoy the Daily Buddhism. I've recently taken my dedication to Buddhism seriously, but sadly, I'm having a hard time bringing it to my parenting, particularly with discipline. I can hug, hold, listen, etc. with 100% of my being, but I'm still struggling with disciplining my children in a kind way. I was wondering if you could help me with this. Any info would be of great help. And then my answer. First, let me point out that I am not a parent, so this is an entirely unqualified opinion on the subject. Take all that follows with a skeptical grain of salt. I am not a parent, but I do babysit my niece and nephew fairly often. My niece is calm and quiet, and she hangs on my every word, eager to please. My nephew, however, lives in his own little world, quite often babbling so much that even he doesn't know what he's saying or doing. It's very hard to get his attention sometimes without yelling. I often feel bad about yelling, even though I know full well that there's no other way to get his attention. I'd never dream of hitting him, but I often feel bad about just raising my voice. I can certainly imagine what it must be like dealing with this kind of thing on a daily basis. Now, discipline has its place, but you already knew that. The problem is that with discipline of any kind, the child cries, pouts, or otherwise displays hurt. We feel bad because we have hurt the child. I don't mean physical hurting. I mean displeasure at not getting their way, or maybe shame or guilt at being reprimanded. Yet even with something like a timeout, standing in the corner, or losing a toy for the day, the crying begins. The real question here is that a bad thing? You are, in fact, creating suffering for the child. Surely that cannot be a good thing, right? On the other hand, think of the alternatives to proper discipline. We've all been in stores and seen someone else's little monsters acting up while their parents ignore them. We comment that my child would never act like that. Well, why wouldn't your children act like that? Discipline. Eventually, most children learn social rules and will behave appropriately on their own. But is that the case for very young children? No. Children are in many ways primitive. They understand fear. Fear of what disobeying means. Fear, and in a Buddhist sense, suffering, can be a valuable learning tool. We learn not to do those things which cause suffering. Again, I'm one of those pacifist people who absolutely advocates not hitting, beating, slapping, or anything like that. But I do believe that children need to fear discipline, or they have no reason to obey. Now, I am talking about younger children, ages maybe 3 to 7. Beyond that age, they should be able to behave on their own. But even then, they're going to make occasional mistakes. Although terrorizing your children is not going to be productive, a bit of healthy fear, or maybe respect would be a better word, is going to help them learn, and is, in the long run, a good thing. Now, you state in your question that you want to do kind discipline, which I am interpreting to mean discipline without the tears. And I'm not sure that there is such a thing. Discipline is always going to go against the child's wishes, and that's always going to result in some tears and suffering. Now, I hope maybe some kind reader who is also a parent will chime in here and offer some advice from experience. And they did. As of right now, this is probably the most commented on post since I've started the Daily Buddhism a year ago. There are easily a dozen, probably more by now, responses from other people chiming in on the topic, either agreeing or disagreeing with me. Check out the comments and feel free to add your own. And then it was time for another guest author. This time we have a great short poem by Zara Eves. Zara's creative writing is published in numerous print journals, anthologies, online e-zines, and magazines. She has 2 audio collections, Crowned Compassion and Sleep in the Sea Tonight with Me. In addition, 2 books of her poetry are published, Empty as Nirvana and Ordinary Substance. Currently, she is working on releasing her 3rd audio collection, while working on a new poetry book, a short story, and a fine art collection. And for the Daily Buddhism audio show this week, Zara has sent in her poem, Crowned Compassion, which she will now read for us.
Crowned Compassion. I rise on this plateau from another world, from the world beyond, from the roots of virtue and noble intention. I rise from a prayer, part land, part stone, part divine imagination and clay. I'm carved from the human life here in this world, from hands that have known sorrow, innocence, loss. From hands that have known drunkenness and love, lust. I'm formed simultaneous as all movement, motion, aware. Born as Bodhisattva, as friend. As the eternal mother. As embodiment of attributes, both strong and slender. I grow from the roots of non-attachment. As bodhicitta, as the relief from torment and suffering. I grow up out of the dirt, mud, rock, toward the sun, rain, sky. I evolve as porcelain insight, blue as the universe. unfolding brilliant white, glowing constellation, star by star. Blossoming consciousness, petal by petal. Crystal as the lotus. From the pure land, I emerge.
And you can find links to Zara Eve's main website and links to order her CDs from CD Baby on the Daily Buddhism show notes for this week. Now we move on to the koan for the week. This time is called the First Principle. When one goes to Obaku Temple in Kyoto, he sees carved over the gate the words, "The First Principle." The letters are unusually large, and those who appreciate calligraphy always admire them as being a masterpiece. They were drawn by Kosen 200 years ago. When the master drew them, he did so on paper, from which the workman made the large carving in wood. As Kosen sketched the letters, a bold pupil was with him who had made several gallons of ink for the calligraphy and who never failed to criticize his master's work. "That is not good," he told Kosen after his first effort. "How is this one?" "Poor. Worse than before," pronounced the pupil. Kosen patiently wrote one sheet after another until 84 first principles had accumulated, still without the approval of the pupil. Then, when the young man stepped outside for a few moments, Kosen thought, "Now this is my chance to escape his keen eye," and he wrote hurriedly, with a mind free from distraction, "The First Principle." "A masterpiece," pronounced the pupil. And then it was time for another reader question. This one writes in, "About a year ago, I became interested in Buddhism, mainly as a philosophy. I still stand by this philosophical standpoint, but I still have questions. You see, when people ask me what my religion is, I generally just say, I'm an atheist, but I share some Buddhist beliefs also. Now, generally after saying this, I quickly get such responses as, but you listen to metal. Or even, but you watch really violent and gory movies. And this apparently makes me a bad person. It's true, though. I'm a fan of the more extreme side of music, with stuff like death metal, black metal, and grindcore. This isn't certainly the only music I listen to, and the same goes with movies. I enjoy my share of violent movies such as zombie, cannibal, and exploitation films. Because of this, people tell me that I'm a bad Buddhist, after which I usually ask why. They will go on about how it makes you a violent, dangerous, and overall mean person. But I'm the exact opposite. I'm a very happy and easy person to get along with. So enough of this, but I'm wondering for someone else's opinion. If such movies and music are having no negative effects on my behavior, actions, or even thoughts towards harming others, is it really bad? I've always heard it's good to perceive the world as it really is, and the world isn't always happy and full of sunshine." And my answer. Not often, but once in a while I get a question where I just chuckle and laugh the entire time I'm writing the answer. I had to laugh when this email came in because I had just finished watching the first two Saw movies only minutes before. Although I am not a fan of loud music, I am a major fan of horror films, always have been and probably always will be. And generally, I prefer the less gory ones from the 50s and 60s. But I like a good modern bloodbath film once in a while, too. George Romero and Fulci's zombie movies are great. I also like 28 Weeks Later. But, hey, I'm a fan. I'm going to talk about movies from here on out, but the same goes for your music and video games as well. There are two conflicting ideas here, that Buddhists are pacifistic, nonviolent people, and that horror movies depict murder, torture, sadism, as well as gratuitous blood and gore. The real question is whether or not these two ideas are incompatible. And here are my thoughts on the subject. Feel free to add your own comments. First, do you believe that horror films and loud music and video games cause violence? There is research that goes both ways, but most of it has been done on impressionable children, and even then it's an arguable point. You don't sound like a child, so I assume you are a grown-up who has learned the difference between right and wrong, fantasy and reality, film and life. Children may not always have that ability, but you do. Second, you like zombie and cannibal movies. I'm guessing you aren't a cannibal. Do you fantasize about eating people? I suspect not. Now, if I'm wrong about that, keep it to yourself. But if you don't do the actions or think about doing them, what's the harm in watching them? Horror movies are a release from the tensions and fears of real life, which in their own way reduces suffering. As I write this, I'm reminded of a sensitive topic from last week, and I suppose the two situations do have their similarities. Third, Buddhism is very much about stripping away illusions that we carry around with us. You know that these movies aren't real, and if anything, Buddhism should help reinforce that idea. Not only aren't the movies real, in many ways your normal life isn't what you think it is either. 4. This might be stretching things a bit, but we have talked here before about the practice of meditation on a corpse, where a meditator concentrates and imagines various stages of death. I think the in-your-face approach to death that movies have may not offer the same benefits, but there's probably an argument to be made in that idea somewhere. Experience with death reduces the fear of death. And last, number 5. What you are really dealing with here are other people's preconceived notions about what a Buddhist should be like. Use the opportunity to enlighten them about what Buddhists believe and why you are a real one. Never turn down an opportunity to teach others and remove their illusions of what a real Buddhist should be like. This topic also got a lot of comments on the blog, some of which disagreed with me. You should probably read the comments and decide for yourself. And then when we were talking about the horror movies, we briefly mentioned that the Buddhist tendency is to be peaceful and nonviolent. This idea has come up many times in the past, but we've never really looked into it too deeply. The Sanskrit term for this idea is ahimsa, which literally translates to the avoidance of violence, but generally is stated in English as do no harm. The idea and the word predate Buddhism going way back in Hinduism's history. Ahimsa is primarily a term from Hinduism and is better known to Buddhists as the first precept. I undertake the training rule to abstain from taking life. Now, some groups go to great lengths to avoid killing anything, even insects. Followers of Jainism, which is not a sect of Buddhism, but a whole other religion if you're not familiar with it, go out of their way so as to not hurt even small insects and other minuscule animals, and they make considerable efforts not to injure plants in everyday life as far as possible also. For Buddhists, the ideas of ahimsa preclude going to war or committing murder, and although hotly debated, they're the center of the argument for vegetarianism as well. Are there limits? Practically, yes. In our modern lives, it's very hard to avoid killing insects. Vegetarianism is not required for most Buddhists. Sometimes war is forced upon us. Do you apply the first precept consciously in your life? I suspect very few of us have ever actually killed a person. But do you actually use this precept consciously in your day-to-day life? How? I'd like to hear your experiences. And as I record this, there are quite a few responses on the blog as well. Really should check that out. There's a lot of comments going on there. And that wraps up episode 40 of the Daily Buddhism Audio Show. If you have a question on any Buddhism-related topic at all, send in your questions by email to dailybuddhism@replaymedia.com or phone them in at 937-660-4949 or post them in the comment section of any individual blog post. The Daily Buddhism runs primarily from your donations and is easy to help out. Just go to dailybuddhism.com/donate and click on any one of the options there. You can donate for as little as $1. If you choose to send in either $5 a month or make a one-time donation of $50 or more, you will get a free subscription to the weekly Buddhism PDF magazine. But anything you send is always appreciated and helpful. Keep in mind that the Daily Buddhism Daily Email Newsletter is completely free. All you need to do is go to the site and sign up. See you next week!